You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 24th of June, 2013, right here on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to a very special edition of Midori House on this 24th of June, 2013, with me, Tyler Brulé. Well, we've left our London headquarters and are broadcasting today from the terrace of the Park Hyatt Hotel here in Milan to, of course, well, almost kick off Men's Fashion Week. On Saturday, Milan opened its doors to some of the world's leading designers in menswear, and the streets in the city have been packed with those eager to see what this year's shows may hold. Of course, that's what's going to be in store for next summer. In this special edition of the program, we'll be speaking to the people behind some of the world's most influential fashion brands, the buyers making the decisions, and the business behind the shows. And of course, we'll talk about some of the shows as well. So lots to come in the next 60 minutes of this special edition of Midori House, live from the terrace of the Park Hyatt in Milan, here on Monocle 24. And good morning from our setup just outside the Park Hyatt in Milan. Hopefully this very large garbage truck, which is in front of us, so we're going to keep it at bay for the next 59 minutes or so. But first, we're going to head back to London for the world news with Barney Burnham.
Monocle 24 News, I'm Barney Burnham. The condition of the former South African President Nelson Mandela has deteriorated to critical. On Sunday, President Jacob Zuma and the deputy leader of the ruling ANC, Cyril Ramaphosa, visited Mandela in his Pretoria hospital, where doctors said his condition had worsened in the last 24 hours. The 94-year-old was admitted on the 8th of June, suffering from a recurring lung condition. The US State Department's warning Western nations against allowing the man who revealed details of secret surveillance programs to proceed in any further international travel other than is necessary to return him to the United States. The former security contractor Edward Snowden is believed to have arrived in Moscow on Sunday. A source at the Russian airline Aeroflot says he's booked on a flight to Havana on Monday afternoon. Ecuador's foreign ministry has confirmed that he's applied to them for political asylum. Speaking through an interpreter, Foreign Minister Ricardo Patino, who's in Hanoi, said the request will be considered very carefully.
Nosotros actuamos siempre por principios, no tanto por intereses, sino por los principios que animan un gobierno como el gobierno del Ecuador.
We also always act by principles, not by interests, but by the principles that rule our Ecuador, our country.
Hay diferencias entre las actuaciones de algunos gobiernos y otros. Hay unos que actúan más por sus intereses y otros que actuamos más por principios, por los derechos humanos, por la vida de la gente.
There are some governments that act more upon their own interests, but we do not. We act upon our principles and we take care of human rights.
The US Secretary of State John Kerry, who's on a visit to India, has said that the country is an important partner to Afghanistan as it prepares for elections next year. In his keynote address at a seminar in New Delhi on the US-India strategic partnership, he said India has a central role to play in Afghanistan's future.
The world's largest democracy can play a central role in helping the government of Afghanistan improve its electoral system and create a credible and independent framework for resolving disputes.
The French President François Hollande has arrived in Jordan for talks with King Abdullah on regional issues, including the Middle East peace process and the Syrian crisis. France is one of the first countries to provide aid to Jordan in an attempt to help the kingdom deal with the influx of around 500,000 Syrian refugees. King Abdullah said both he and President Hollande agreed it's crucial that the situation is resolved as soon as possible.
We both believe that the longer that the Syrian conflict goes on, the greater it will have on long-term implications. And therefore, we both are working very hard on inclusive political transition for Syria that is encompassing to all.
Power outages in the Canadian city of Calgary could last for weeks or even months as record-breaking floodwaters move downstream to threaten smaller communities in southeastern Alberta. Even as officials told 65,000 residents in Calgary that they could start returning to their water-damaged homes, 10,000 people were evacuated in Medicine Hat. Over 100,000 people have been displaced. Three people have been confirmed dead since the evacuations began on Thursday. The daredevil Nick Wallenda has completed a high-wire walk on a 2-inch steel cable over a section of the Grand Canyon. The 34-year-old took 22 minutes and 54 seconds to walk 1,400 feet across the canyon without a tether or a safety net. Well, Ender said the walk, which was broadcast live around the world, was stressful with gusts of wind that moved the cable. But he also said the view was breathtaking. Those are the main stories here on Monocle 24.
Thanks very much for that, Barney. Just looking at the International Herald Tribune, of course, it's the global edition of the New York Times, I like to call it these days. Of course, Susie Menkes is the woman who's really at the center of journalism, both for menswear and womenswear. So everything that she says generally goes, or maybe not quite. Two things, though. Story here about Stefano Pilati, of course, a gentleman who was formerly associated with the Gucci Group, now, of course, that holding company known as Kering. We're leading on a story here. It says Pilati's feeling for Zegna. He is now, of course, he's now the new designer for the Ermenegildo Gildo Zegna brand. So it says, it's sexy, Stefano Pilati said, to define the first collection of the Italian menswear powerhouse, Ermenegildo Gildo Zegna. Also, a story on Prada this morning as well, saying, questioning the cliche of the exotic, the cliche of the perfect summer, of impossible happiness. And that's also on page 9 of the IHT this morning. It is just 16:06 if you're listening in Tokyo, 14:06 in Bangkok, 9:06 here in Milan, 8:06 in London. This is Midori House. We're back in a moment. Now, this is a very special Fashion Week edition of Midori House, and we're on the terrace of the Park Hyatt here in Milan. Well, we're going to be talking about craftsmanship in this country, and shoes may come top of the list. Italy has been producing top-quality footwear for more than a century, and it features prominently at Men's Fashion Week here in Milan. One of those brands is Fratelli Rossetti. Founded in 1953 by Renzo Rossetti, the family patriarch, the company prides itself on using traditional and handmade techniques. While Renzo was busy growing the company, it wasn't until he handed control to one of his three sons, Diego, Dario, and Luca, that things really took off. The man widely seen as the commercial heart of the company is Diego Rossetti, helped grow the shoemaker into a global brand with stores in Europe, Asia, North America, the Middle East, and Africa. And he's joining me here on the terrace. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to see you.
Thank you.
Now, maybe we should jump ahead. We'll come back to Milan in a moment, but I want to talk about this whole notion of growth. I mean, your company was really recognized as probably one of the first major players on Madison Avenue. Now, as I said in the intro, you might be credited with that, but that idea of becoming the standalone brand, how did that come about?
Well, that was one of the intuitions of my father.
It wasn't you just wanting to go to New York?
No. Oh, okay. No, I... You know, it's typical when I joined the company in 1978, like all the young kids, they all want to do something different because they think that the parents did everything wrong. And, you know, my father was very smart in making me, you know, going ahead with this idea of going to New York. But the problem was that he didn't give me enough budget to open on Fifth Avenue, which was the place to be those days. So the only spot I could find was Madison, the corner of 58. Madison, at that time, you know, was like First Avenue now. I mean, there were no boutiques. Actually, the ready-to-wear in Italy was still, wasn't there yet.
Mm.
And so we started this venture. Me, us and Benetton, we took a big store, we divided it in two, and those were the two first Italian boutiques to open on Madison Avenue.
Now today, aside from, of course, a very large standalone network, and of course shop and shops, etc., what's unique about your business is that you're not one of the major groups. I mean, we've seen this extraordinary consolidation in this country, globally as well, and you know, oftentimes brands fall under the umbrella of three, maybe four companies right now. What does independence give you? And you know, it's interesting, before we went on air, we were talking about your manufacturing just to the northwest of Milan. Is there clearly independence? But what else does it give you, do you think?
Well, being independent is not easy because you have to, I mean, compete with these giants.
Your own pockets at the end of the day.
Right. I mean, to find locations is not easy. And but, you know, we focused very much on our peculiar, on our tradition, on what we know to do well. So we focused on selling only the products we are producing ourselves. We very focused on...
That's unique, because a lot of companies who might be, I'm not saying in a similar position to you, but then they're also doing collections for a lot of other brands.
Yeah, we are proud of, we're very proud of that, because if you think about a company that has such a wide range of products, with stores all over the world and everything made in its own factory, we're really pretty unique. And this unicity is really what, it's really our point of strength. A lot of customers are confident that they're buying something that has a good value for money because it's produced entirely within the company.
I mean, there's certainly been a lot of question marks raised about what made in Italy means today. And now as you open up into other markets, we are just again discussing Bangkok is coming up soon, a market which is absolutely on fire at the moment. Does made in Italy become more important than ever in markets like that? Or do you find also in emerging markets, people only care about your brand name? They're not really turning over the shoe. Do they really care where it's made?
It depends. You know, there are certain, for certain designers, the name of the designer, it's even more important than the place where things are made. In our case, I think that the fact that everything is made in Italy, made in our own company, really makes a difference. It's a sort of a guarantee for the consumer. And overall, I think that made in Italy is a brand that really sells, because people are confident that what's made in Italy, especially certain products, really make the difference.
This country is not going through the easiest time right now. A lot of question marks about, you know, in many ways, too many things being offshored, made elsewhere. Do we know it's made in Italy? Do you think that, I don't want to call it a crisis, but certainly the situation that Italy sits in at the moment, has this been a wake-up call for a lot of other companies as well to say, you know what, the logistics of moving things around and everything, actually having everything controlled in one place, or at least being a train trip away to really keep an eye on manufacturing, is really what's been at the heart of this country's success before, and whether we're returning to that, or do you think we're still in this bit of a hybrid situation here?
It's probably hybrid also, because it's not easy, I mean, to set up a production, especially if we're talking about shoes, a production of shoes is something that you don't do overnight. I mean, it's something that you keep on improving if you have it, if you have the know-how. You know, a lot of companies, they took the shortcut in 10, 20 years ago to produce somewhere else, and the result is that they lost the know-how. So now it's not easy to go back to
and start up again.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, but as far as you know, you do the production elsewhere, but in Italy you can still have it under control. For instance, in our town, Parabiago is a shoe town, and there are a lot of small and bigger shoe companies who work for the big brands, and they've great quality there.
Diego Rossetti of Fratelli Rossetti, I look forward to hopefully seeing you in Bangkok at the opening. Is this the one major opening of the year for you, or?
Well, we did Taipei in March, and this one in Bangkok is really very important. It's a new upcoming market, and it's a big test for us.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us here on Midori House. Coming up next, we're going to stay on a shoe theme. You are listening to Midori House here on Monocle 24. We're back right after this.
It's that time of year when Monocle's mighty July-August double issue hits the newsstands with a glorious and satisfying thud. It's the issue where we name the best cities to call home, meet the people who know how to run a good metropolis, check out the businesses that care about more than profits, and also find a few dustier, grittier places that you should know. Here's what our editors have lined up for you to enjoy on your lounger.
In the design section, we go street cleaning with the wonderful Greenbird team in Tokyo. We knock on the doors of the people who live in the pioneering Harlan estate outside Bern, and we strip off for a steamy fashion story in Helsinki's newest, cutest public sauna.
In the edit section, we take you for a stroll around some of the world's best public parks, including Singapore Gardens by the Bay, Margaret Island in Budapest, and São Paulo's Ibirapuera Park, three places where you can work out surrounded by nature, sculptures, and open-air cinema.
The July-August issue of Monocle also includes our inaugural 68-page food and entertaining guide and a 24-page Rio de Janeiro survey. It will keep you content with content all summer long. It's on newsstands now, or get yourself a subscription. Visit monocle.com to find out how.
With a nod to the past and a wink to the future, Monocle takes a look at the world of perfume and the new generation of expert alchemists.
One of the things that becomes quite an achievement in fragrance is creating that intangible magic when three or four or five disparate elements come together. And in that sense, it's not dissimilar to the visual arts, to painting, or to music.
Artisan Perfume Makers, a film from London, New York, and Buenos Aires on monocle.com.
And welcome back to the special Fashion Week edition of Midori House, men's, of course. Now, we've left our usual haunt in Studio One in central London, have transplanted ourselves with coffee and, well, at least a couple of bottles of water anyway on the terrace of the Park Hyatt. If you heard the top of the show, we also managed to chase that garbage truck away as well. Now, if Pope John Paul II, let's make that Pope John Paul II, chose to wear the creations, they must be doing something right. Founded in 1905 by Severino Artioli. Artioli Shoes has remained a family business spanning over three generations to today's descendants, Masters Vito and Andrea Artioli. From hand tanning select leathers to the double and reverse stitching process, the name Artioli is synonymous with a level of handmade craftsmanship that speaks to today's luxury consumer. And the markets for these traditional handcrafted shoes, of course, go as far as emerging markets like Russia and China, but also Japan and Australia. And joining us is, well, at least one half of the duo, Andrea Artioli. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to meet you.
Now, I was, we were talking to Mr. Rossetti a little bit earlier, just before the break. Obviously, a different scale of business that you're running. And just, you know, it's very interesting when you look at emerging economies right now. And I mentioned Russia and China. Last segment, of course, we were talking about how we're seeing markets like Thailand on the rise as well. Would you say that these emerging economies where there's this interest in the status of having handmade, bespoke, whatever it may be, that this is almost a little bit of a savior for your business? The fact that the likes of China, Russia, and are those, you know, if those are the lead markets, is that really helping propel the business forward?
I think yes. There is a lot of interest for quality. The quality is very important for them, especially because they are very active people. Young generation is fully booked with the 12-14 hour schedule on the day, so they need some good shoes to make their life better, to live always in the best way, to have always a very clear head, to take the energy that the sun gives to the land, and to allow this energy to fly to their body and to their brain.
Mm. Now, a business like yours succeeds or fails, of course, based on the next generation. I don't even mean the family, but also next generation of craftsmen. And you know, in many corners of Europe, we've seen a crisis with apprenticeships, finding people who actually still want to do this work. At the same time, though, we've seen a resurgence. We've seen countries like Austria really investing and really trying to push this and make sure that there's a culture where people are still making things. Has this been much of a problem for you to be able to make sure that you have people working, you know, on your benches, creating your shoes?
It is not a problem because the young generation are coming back to the art. Italy was so important during the Renaissance. We had so many artists, now I can see that it's like a new Renaissance for Italian young generation to come back to the art. And what is the best art we have now in Italy is the fashion, is to produce garments, to produce shoes, to produce something that communicates to the world that the beauty is in Italy. That we still have a lot to give to the world, like we have done in the past. The future is for clever people that knows how to transform the raw material in something beautiful. Mm.
How do you transfer that in terms of price? Is there a big education for the consumer? And that's not even just the consumer from the emerging market, but also I think if you look at a lot of developed economies, people are always so focused on value today. And yes, we've seen this increase in, of course, bridge collections and people wanting, let's say, a designer hand, but not wanting to pay for it. How do you challenge this?
You see, the leaders of the world, they expect the best price for the quality they buy. They are very intelligent people. So we have a price-conscious consumers that they value what you offer to them. A lot of brands, they upgrade their prices enormously and they have no success because they don't have the right price for the quality they offer. Mm. The innovation should be always there, and but the innovation should not have a higher price of what it is. So the intelligent consumers can evaluate the product for especially the shoes, wearing the shoes, you understand that is the right quality for the price you paid.
Mm. Just before we go, where are you seeing the most growth for your business? Are there still traditional economies that are holding up, or is your focus very much a Shanghai, Beijing, Moscow, even to India focus right now?
You know, I could say that the leaders of the world are consumers that travel a lot. For instance, the boutique we have in London, which is in Hans Crescent in front of Harrods, it's amazing, is increasingly all the time the selling, because a lot of leaders, they travel to London for shopping and they find my shoes there. Not only my shoes, they find also my belts, my leather goods, my bags, the leather garments, the perfume, and they enjoy to buy there. So I could say that in Europe, because of the traveling, it could be the next grow for my products in the marketing.
Excellent. Andrea Artioli of Artioli Shoes, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Midori
thank
House.
You. It has been a pleasure.
When we come back, we will be talking to Elisabetta Canali here on Midori House. Stay with us.
From London
to New York
to Tokyo
to Shanghai
to Buenos Aires,
to Hong Kong,
to Berlin,
to Tel Aviv,
to Toronto,
to Amsterdam,
to Zurich.
All around the world, this is Monocle 24.
And welcome back to Midori House here on Monocle 24. It is just 22 minutes. That's actually, what is it? It's 16:22. If you're listening in Tokyo, it's 14:22 in Bangkok, 8:22 back in London. And we are indeed on the terrace of the Park Hyatt in Milano. And Elisabetta Canali has just sat down across from me. Good morning. Very, very nice to see you.
Good morning, Tyler.
I wanted to maybe sort of look at first, when we met many years ago, there was this importance of Pitti, and now we're sitting in Milan. Is the relationship between, and for those who are not familiar, Pitti Uomo being, of course, one of the major trade fairs as well, is it still modern, do you think, to have back-to-back this Firenze, not really versus, but then also this Milan story as well? How do you see it?
I think that it depends on your strategy. Pitti, a show in Florence, is much more commercial. Show in Milan involves the image much more. So for us, at this point, was much more important working on the image. And
right.
Milan is our hometown, so for us it's even easier to show in Milan.
Mm. What's standout for you this year when you have so much to cut through? I mean, the good news is, despite stories of what the economy is like, there's always new designers coming up. People still want to show here. Some people then, of course, decide, do they want to be in Milan? Do they want to be in Paris? Even London, trying to make a bit of noise for itself as well. What have been the main stories for you, Elisabetta, in terms of really cutting through this year?
In colors, as usual, is quite strong. We play a lot with colors, even if it's quite different. It's quite difficult because you know that men generally likes to choose safe color like blacks, blues and grays. But we made this break choice years ago, and we keep on presenting and showing patterns and colors and all the original and difficult pieces that men generally are quite different to approach. Mm. The line this year is quite fluid and supple, and the focus will be on waistline.
And is that waistline going up or down? Hopefully it's not expanding too much. Hope you don't mean waistlines for larger American consumers. But when you say waistline, how do you define that?
It's all about balance, quite balance between, of course, a shoulder and waistline. Mm. So everything is very soft and, again, supple. So the waistline that last year was very tight and embraced, this year is marked, but in a very soft way.
Right. Now, is this a reflection also to how your markets are changing as well? And you have a massive retail network and part, of course, and you know, partnerships as well. How much do you have to listen to markets that are growing quickly, and then how much do you have to feed that back to your design team as well in terms of silhouette, etc.?
But we travel quite a lot, and we do a lot of market research. Of course, we take in high consideration all the suggestion that comes for our main markets, United States, China, and Europe. And basically, we work on a collection that is, in any case, reflect our style, the Italian style. Maybe we can choose different colors or different fabric, but we would like to export the Italian style and the Canali style. So it's quite important to meet the different requests coming from different countries, but we notice that these countries are looking for Italian style.
Mm. When we talk about these countries and also this country that we're sitting in, where does Italy sit for you in terms of not just the spirit of the brand, etc., but sales and as a market? Because everyone's eyes are beyond Malpensa Airport now. They're looking, of course, around the world. But is Italy still also a core in terms of turnover for you?
Well, probably is not the right moment to talk about Italy. In any case, we are an international brand, so we export more than 87% of our production. But this is basically our reality. We started years ago. If you think that we opened the U.S. market in 1978. And Italy, of course, is quite important for us. Unfortunately, it's not growing as fast as other markets like China, like India, and the United States, too. If you think that in 2012, China grew by 32% and Russia by a whopping 30%, and Middle East another 30%, United States 25%. I prefer not to talk about Italy.
Tell me, those numbers are remarkable. What does expansion look like for you as well? Is it making sure you solidify your base in those countries that you mentioned? And obviously that is through more freestanding stores, bigger marketing campaigns, etc. But are there also more niche areas that you're looking at as well?
Of course. We keep on expanding our retail strategy. We will keep on opening a new store. Now we have 235 stores all over the world, 27 of which are directly open, directly operated. And more to come. More or less, we are going to open 15 stores per year. And we are looking for a specific key city to open the new store. And, of course, for us, with a relevant importance.
Elisabetta Canale, hopefully you have a good selling season and all goes well. Thank you very much for joining us here at Midori House.
Thank you, Tyler.
In the next half hour of the program, we'll give you a sleek behind-the-scenes guide to, of course, Fashion Week. We'll also see what it takes to get those outfits, of course, from catwalks to department stores. But first, it's time to head back to London, almost at the bottom of the hour, right on the money. It is time to go to Barney Burnham with our headlines. How about Burnham, even? Barney, over to you.
Thank you, Tyler. The condition of the former South African President Nelson Mandela has deteriorated to critical. On Sunday, President Jacob Zuma and the deputy leader of the ruling ANC, Cyril Ramaphosa, visited Mandela in his Pretoria hospital, where doctors said his condition had worsened in the last 24 hours. Edward Snowden, the man who revealed details of US secret surveillance programs, is believed to have arrived in Moscow on Sunday. A source at the Russian airline Aeroflot says he's booked on a flight to Havana later today. Ecuador has confirmed that he's applied to them for political asylum. The US Secretary of State John Kerry, who's on a visit to India, has said the country's an important partner to Afghanistan as it prepares for elections next year. He said India had a central role to play in Afghanistan's future. The French President François Hollande has arrived in Jordan for talks with King Abdullah on regional issues, including the Middle East peace process and the Syrian crisis. King Abdullah said both he and President Hollande agreed it was crucial that the situation in Syria was resolved as soon as possible. Power outages in the Canadian city of Calgary could last for weeks or even months as record-breaking floodwaters move downstream to threaten smaller communities in southeastern Alberta. Over 100,000 people have been displaced. Three people have been confirmed dead since the evacuations began on Thursday. The daredevil Nick Wallander has completed a high-wire walk on a 2-inch steel cable over a section of the Grand Canyon. He took 22 minutes and 54 seconds to walk 1,400 feet across the canyon without a tether or a safety net. He said the view was breathtaking. Those are the headlines at the bottom of the hour here on Monocle 24.
Thanks very much for that, Barney. It's just 15:31 in Hong Kong, 9:31 here in Milan. You're listening to Midori House with me, Tyler Brulé. Well, of course, it's not just all parties. It was actually just behind me last night. Monocle was hosting our regular shindig that we do twice a year during the men's shows. Of course, amidst all of that conversation, a lot of talk about the state of the business, a lot of retailers that we had here from Italy talking about really just this remarkable story that many of them, of course, have to... sit there, really count their pennies. The customers are not there. They're certainly maybe not here in this market. They're driving over the border from Switzerland and they're certainly flying in from elsewhere. Of course, in a very, very vicious cycle in terms of not just what this means for supply chain, but also P&L as well. We thought we'd maybe cut through this a little bit more this morning. Rachel Sanderson is here, luxury analyst with the Financial Times. Good morning.
Good morning.
This seems to be this, you know, ongoing discussion that you speak to a lot of the major brands and they just say and I'm talking the major Italian brands, they're just not getting paid. You have a situation in Italy where a lot of retailers, they haven't been paying for three seasons, and there's almost no choice. Do you either supply these people hoping that there's going to be a check some season or not, and that the whole thing craters? Is that really where the business is sitting? Is it a crisis situation like that everywhere, Rachel, do you think?
We've definitely got a situation where the mom and pop stores are really struggling in Italy. Those things that when you've come as a tourist to Italy, you say, isn't it fabulous? They've got all these, you know, designer boutiques. These are shutting down now. It's also because they're not being paid, because they can't sustain sales. Their original clients are really not paying stuff anymore. It's also accelerating the movement of smaller Italian luxury brands to join up with big groups such as Kering, the old PPR, and we've seen Pomellato, of course, recently, the wonderful Milanese jewelry brand, deciding that actually they can't go it alone anymore and they need to be part of a big group.
And this means with Pomellato, they're hooking up with, or to be determined?
No, they decided they initially had thought about doing an initial an offering on the Milan Stock Exchange, but flows of investors to the Milan Stock Exchange aren't very strong, so they said actually they went into talks with Prada, they went into talks with the Qataris. They were also briefly in talks with the Italian State Financing Fund, but ultimately they decided to take up an offer from Kering. As I said, that's the former PPR that we know already owns Gucci and Bottega Veneta.
Right. Now, tell me, what does this mean? Because you go into so many small Italian towns, but oftentimes very wealthy Italian towns. And you mentioned these mom and pop shops. Oftentimes, you know, they're major players. That they may not occupy very many square meters, but they are big buyers. They buy deep. But of course, they've been hit. What does that do for the distribution network? And do you think this means that we're going to have to see even more of the major groups? In fact, having to do more standalone stores on their own because it's not going to make sense anymore. And well, in fact, maybe these mom and pop operations won't be around anymore.
Yeah, I think what we're going to see is one, as you've said, your previous guests have mentioned, the Italians aren't buying anymore. They don't have the money to buy anymore. They're actually recouping savings. They're deeply concerned about extra money they're paying on taxes. They're deeply concerned, most particularly, about whether their children and grandchildren are going to be able to survive, so they're keeping money back from that. So you don't really need the distribution throughout Italy, with the exception of any more to penetrate Italians, where the stores are putting new stores, cleaning up their stores, renovating, are in Milan, Venice, Florence, and Rome. Mm. Because those are the four cities where Chinese, South American, US consumers who are really taking off again are coming and shopping. Mm. Those are the four major cities. Other than that, you go to Bologna, which used to have a lot of stores. They're all shutting down there because the Italians aren't shopping anymore.
Yeah, and what I heard last night, we were talking to some people who at least are very close to the Swiss border. They think, thank goodness for Lugano in Switzerland. So if you're probably in Como and other places, you're all right because people are coming across. They're doing fine, but that's also a tiny market as well.
Absolutely. I mean, you have people, I think you're a great fan of Como and Lago di Como, and you've got people coming along from the Villa d'Este, from the hotel, and they'll be doing fine over there. But what we're talking about is the sort of the hinterland of Italy. You have seen, for example, Todd's, a very well-known, a very entrepreneurial Italian leather brand, but they've been shutting a lot of their stores in Italy outside those four large cities for that reason.
Mm, yeah, and that's remarkable, because when you mention even the traditional resort towns, and whether we're talking about being in Sardinia, Forte di Marmi, all of these places, it's just not, the face of those towns is not the same anymore. Even though you have the tourist numbers, but they used to be quite sizable promenades of every major international name, and now you have a lot of high street in the mix as well. I wanted to just go. Oftentimes when we hear about the crisis in Europe, we talk about a lost generation, and I'm wondering, will we see a lost generation in this country when it comes to creativity? And whether that is someone, working on the production line all the way through to, of course, someone who's sketching patterns, etc. as well. Do you think there's a design brain drain going on here, or people just simply, looking for greener pastures, other sectors as well?
It's a very interesting question. I think I'll put the designer question aside, because that, it's been a discussion for several years about that design innovation of the sort of creatives haven't been coming through so much in Milan because they move elsewhere. On the side of the craftsmanship, one of the reasons that Kering, that LVMH, bought Pomellato 2 years ago, is they are coming in and they're really making enormous efforts to preserve the craftsmanship in Italy. Because one of the peculiar dynamics of this country has been, because it hasn't been as globalized its market as even France or the UK, artisans still exist here that you can't find in France, you can't find in the UK. So on the manufacturing front now, you have French brands, you have UK brands, you have startup Chinese brands, luxury brands, and they want everything made in Italy. So this may be a bright spot, but the funding needs to come from outside, not from the Italians, to preserve those skills.
Mm. And it's interesting too, when we talk about consolidation, there also seems to be another level of consolidation happening as well, where you've got maybe these deep-pocketed manufacturers who are doing exactly what you say. They picked up a lot of contracts, they've managed to keep their factories open. In fact, maybe they're doing quite well. And they're also starting to pick up other smaller brands who haven't been doing well. So do you think we're going to see an emergence of other names, maybe even beyond nothing's maybe going to be as big for many decades as LVMH or Kering, but almost these like new little sub-empires as well out of this country?
I think they'll try. There's certainly a lot of discussion about this, but I frequently discuss this with Italian entrepreneurs, and it's a frustration even for them. But the nature of the Italian entrepreneur is they're extremely competitive, and in many stages they're even more competitive about the entrepreneur who's down the road in Tuscany, for example. Patrizio Bertelli I spoke to before their IPO and asked him about this, and he said, what I care most about is building my brand and competing with the guy down the road in Florence, or competing down the road, with someone from Pisa Livorno. So it's a difficult dynamic here. And why you haven't seen Italians, despite their fabulous, you know, number of brands that they've got, creating a Kering or creating an LVMH.
Mm, great. Rachel Sanderson from the Financial Times, thank you very much for joining us. You are listening to Midori House. When we come back, we're going to be talking about filling those rails as well. Stay with us.
Monocle 24 continues its global summer tour with a stop-off in Thailand. This week, we'll be touching down in Bangkok for two very special editions of The Briefing. On Wednesday and Thursday this week, The Briefing will be coming live from the Thailand Creative and Design Centre, presented by Monocle's editor-in-chief, Tyler Brulé, and editor Andrew Tuck. We'll be bringing you a snappy roundup of the current state of affairs in Thailand's creative scene and meet the people making waves in Bangkok's thriving design community. So tune into The Briefing at midday UK time and 1800 in Thailand. On Wednesday and Thursday this week, live from the Thailand Creative and Design Centre in Bangkok, right here on Monocle 24.
And you are back with Midori House. We are coming to you live from Milan, from the terrace of the Park Hyatt. And just around the corner from us, not very far, is a rather fine department store. Now, fashion buyers have a tricky role to play in the industry, forecasting months, sometimes even years ahead of what accessories and apparel will be big. Joining us right now on the program is Tiziana Cardini. She is the fashion director and head buyer at that very nice store around the corner at Le Rinascente. Of course, this is their flagship here in Milan. Le Rinascente is one of Italy's most famous department stores, one of the oldest department stores chains in the country, founded in 1865 by Luigi and Fernando Bocconi. Having worked as an editor and stylist at fashion magazines such as Italian Glamour and Amica for many years, Tiziana is now responsible for scouting new trends and upcoming talents in the Italian international markets. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Tyler.
Now, I have to say the store was absolutely hopping yesterday. I was there and it was interesting looking at the mix, as much as you probably had, of course, I wouldn't say competitors, but people who are going through your store, seeing what you're buying. Mm-hmm. But also on a Sunday, a very, very healthy mix of tourists who seem to be purchasing, which is good. The store has gone through an incredible transformation. Vittorio Radice, many will know the name, of course, from the transformation of Selfridge's days, has been a big part of that mix. He's busier doing other things now with other stores.
Sure.
As well. Tell me about, certainly, where you sit with men's and women's wear in that store, hitting that mix of getting it right for the local market and also for visitors as well. And do you have to think about those two types of customers here?
Well, yes, we have a very healthy mix between, as you said, between tourists and locals. And so, but we try also to be relevant for the international market as a fashion market as a whole. So we try to, find our identity. So trying to be original in a landscape where, you know, you find the very same brands all over the world. So the world is a big department store, is a big mall. You know, we find the same products everywhere. So we try to, carve not a niche, but, you know, we try to have a voice.
Mm.
So we try to balance our mix between, you know, made in Italy, so like more solid and consistent brands, and more innovative, but always, you know, with a kind of character,
mm-hmm.
which is Italian in terms of quality and excellence of products, and also taste, and international or more kind of touches of eccentricity, mm-hmm. and daring choices. So it's fun.
Now tell me, we've heard earlier guests talking about that Italy is no longer a focus market for them. There's no growth in this country. What does that mean for you as a buyer? When you look at the main cities that La Rinascente focuses on, does that mean that you also have to have more of a value proposition? Or do you try to ignore that as a buyer? Or you still have to look at the P&L sheets and see how you perform?
Well, we look at that, of course. But we also try to, you know, to make choices based on, you know, trends and more artistic values. Also because, you know, Italy is known because people are fastidious about taste in general. You know, even the most, you know, normal people, you know, they pay attention to what they wear, to what they buy, to what they, you know, want in their houses as objects. So we have to take that into consideration. Also because when the tourists are coming here, what they want is an editing of, you know, Italian taste. Maybe, you know, also you have to choose international brands, but with our eyes, you know, which is very picky. And always, we are always looking at quality, a balance between more formal and informal. So it's a fine line, you know.
Tell us, just before we go, how important is it you personally as a buyer to also feel that, you know, when you look at your budget, that you're able to take, I wouldn't say a risk, but certainly take a shot on new designers in terms of fueling the market, as opposed to just going with, you know, the sure bet. You might know that that has an 80% sell through. Here is something which is really beautiful. You don't know, but it, you know, it might be a 50% sell through. But, you know, at least you've given someone a chance.
Yes, we try. We try to do that. The thing is that, you know, Italian fashion market is not, you know, we don't have that many new designers in Italy, unfortunately, you know, but we try to incorporate in our brand mix, especially for men's, you know, new designer with a more daring attitude. So we try to do that. We don't only look at, you know, the final line.
Which is always nice. Tiziana Cardini from La Rinascente, thank you very much for joining
us. My pleasure.
Great seeing you. Now, Milan Fashion Week sees the city transformed almost into one big runway. Attendees put their best foot forward, dressed up, of course, in their designer duds, everyone trying to, of course, get onto various websites, etc. Of course, crowds congregate at parties put on by the major fashion brands. Well, but beyond the spectacle, there are, of course, people behind the scenes working to make Made in Italy tick. We dispatched our Milan correspondent, Ivan Carvalho, to catch up with local independent menswear designer, a retailer, and an accessories craftsman to hear firsthand from those working on the front lines of Milanese fashion.
Twice a year, makers of stylish attire for men take center stage in Milan, as buyers and editors invade the city streets in search of the new. An 8.5 billion euro annual business, the Italian menswear industry has big and small labels trying to survive the country's nearly two-year recession. One designer who has been successful amid the upheaval is Massimo Alba, who forgoes the glitz and glam of the catwalk to show his clothes outdoors in nature.
As usual, we will present our collection in a garden, and this will be a very special garden. It's a secret garden. The name of the garden is the garden of Palazzo degli Atellani. Yeah, the collection is based on colors, so all the colors come from nature. That there is, maybe this is a reason, because we are presenting in a garden. So we have a lot of colors and mix it together, patterns and prints. And I like to say that we have a very special knitwear collection based on a very special super light cashmere piece dye, watercolor. All the colors are matte. You know, I really can't imagine how people can buy a brand just because it's a brand, or showing something with the logos, you know, or buying something just because represents something for something else. Our material are very beautiful because I believe in beauty. And I believe that a really nice popeline or a really nice cashmere sweaters or a really nice jacket, a linen jacket, washed, for instance, would be something that, you know, I still have the sweater of my grandfather. And that's the sense. I hate people that buy constantly, you know. I think it's important to mix what you have in your wardrobe. Maybe just a tie, maybe a simple polo will change completely your outfit. So the thing is being in touch with something special. And today there is a lot of opportunity with fast fashion, you know. There is big group, Zara, H&M, everything. We have a lot. So the thing is being yourself, because it's really hard to see all the people dressed in the same way, you know. Also, if you have a look this week, everyone will be dressed with a major brand, Italian major brand, or France major brand, American major brand. That's, for me, it's really, no, I'm not able to even to understand how people can be so predictable.
With the growth of fast fashion chains, independent retailers in Italy are feeling the pinch. Up to 10,000 clothing stores in the country risk closure this year. One bucking the trend is Antonio Uomo in Milan's Brera district. Its mix of classic Italian tailoring and streetwear has long stood out in a crowded market. Antonio's menswear buyer, Dario Spadea Pandolfi.
We are selling very well, actually, the iconic pieces. When I say iconic, is that it means something that the people can recognize on you. As a Kenzo sweatshirt, the new vision of Kenzo, of course, from the designers of opening ceremony. And then Givenchy, men's collection, is going very well. In particular, the t-shirts and sweatshirts and the printed bomber in nylon reversible. For sure, the handmade shirts maker from Naples, Salvatore Piccolo and Finamore. Salvatore Piccolo is make more research in terms of fabric, exclusive from Japan, but the fitting is a little bit more contemporary than Finamore. Finamore is a shirt a little bit more classic, with a classic quality.
Fashion Week also offers buyers the chance to peruse accessories. With the recent wet weather across Italy and elsewhere, business has been looking up for Francesco Maglia, fifth-generation owner of Maglia Francesco, a Milan company that makes umbrellas as well as parasols for many upscale fashion brands.
So I see here she's sewing now. What is she sewing?
She's just sewing the covers of the umbrella.
After watching his staff slowly steam the sewn fabric to iron out the creases of the umbrella's canopy, Maya takes me to another room to show off more made-in-Italy craftsmanship.
We are just fixing the logo on the handles. Everyone is fixed with two little nails, one by one. We do produce handles in wood.
Now here I see you've got many handles. Some are covered in leather. They look all hand-stitched, the ones that are in leather.
All the leather handles are stitched by hand.
Now for you, made in Italy, what does that represent?
The last umbrella maker. So really the last umbrella made, hand-made umbrella.
If there was a trend in Milan this week, it wasn't a color, but a concept, that of quality. From designers to seamstresses, Italy's prominent place in fashion seems safe given people's desire for well-made products that will last. For Monocle, behind the scenes at Milan Fashion Week, I'm Ivan Carvalho.
As well, because of course he is going to be, he's very busy right now. I think he's a poor boy. He's actually heading down to Positano right now, doing a lot of reporting for upcoming Mediterranean edition. You are listening to Midori House. In a moment, a very special friend. He's already sitting across me, but first, a very short break. We're back in a moment. And you are back with Midori House. Almost at the end of the program, I believe we've got about, probably about 6 minutes to go. And I'm joined by my playmate from over the weekend, the editor-in-chief of Departures magazine, new issue, which has just landed in my hand. Is Richard Story, is this the new issue that I have in front of me?
That is. That's the biggest issue we've ever done in the month of July.
And it's an American... Are you trying to compete with me?
I am. I was just going to say, someday you'll get that big.
Now, the issue is an American summer, which we can come back to. Now, you've been on the front lines of the shows, working far harder than I have, but I certainly have.
I know. You've been holding court.
I like it on this particular corner in Milan. What have you seen? Don't go through all the shows, please. But
let me start with all of them. Number one,
what have you seen so far, which is interesting? But I think more to the point. I mean, here is a magazine which is talking to the most premium consumers in the United States. Do you think the market's getting it? I mean, do you sit there and do you see, you know, visit showrooms, look at brands? Are they responding to, I think, not just a U.S. customer, but basically guys like you and I want?
Some of them are and some of them aren't. I've got to tell you, the one who really blew my...
I can see there's no socks today.
I'm not wearing them today. Thomas Mayer at Bottega blew me away. That is the most elegant intellectual presentation of material that I've seen in a very long time. He did a little with the 50s. He did a little with Miles Davis jazz. It was all inspired. I thought it was just really elegant. It's the sort of stuff that you and I would love to wear.
Right.
If we could afford it.
Now tell me, I was talking about the Herald Tribune. Susie Menkes was talking about Prada, saying it was questioning the cliche of the exotic, the cliche of the perfect summer, of impossible happiness.
You know what I would say about that Prada show? It was really entertaining.
It was very Hawaiian, wasn't it?
Some people would say that. I think that it was actually luxury for the South Beach crowd.
Okay. And that South Beach crowd being?
South Beach crowd being a younger, too cool for school sort of group. I can't say that it was necessarily the crowd that Departures buys with, but, you know, it was interesting. It was lively. It was much the same. You know, instead of blue skies, she used red skies in her Hawaiian theme. I don't know if she meant the threat of Asia coming into the market.
Could have been a volcano.
Exactly.
Right?
It should have been the next explosion, right? We've had cyclones, we've had tsunamis, we've had hurricanes. A little pot of volcanic action.
And if it wasn't going to be Bottega, what would you say would be the leader? What would be the runner-up for you so far?
I'll tell you, the runner-up is, and I thought it was really beautiful, was the Missoni collection. And you know, Missoni...
Oh, good, your coffee just arrived.
Just in time. Not that I need it talking to you, Tom.
No,
you always keep us all stimulated. But I think that the Missoni collection was fantastic. I mean, they've had a very difficult, challenging year with the disappearance of the brother and with the death of the father, who was a great patriarch of the family and the inspiration for all of them. It's a wonderful family. And it was so full of life and optimism yesterday. The sweaters were beautiful. The knit suits were gorgeous. It was an interesting array of models ranging from guys 50 years of age to 20 years of age. Harsh faces, beards, beautiful guys, not beautiful guys. I just thought it was really a mature, developed, evolved collection.
So there are probably a few swimsuits in your wardrobe coming up, maybe.
There are a few swimsuits in my wardrobe coming up.
Just tell me quickly about this current issue before we go. Bit of an American theme. And is that because you think also right now people are a bit wary of the economy? Americans staying home? Not necessarily.
No, not at all. In fact, I don't... Departures is a magazine. I take my lead from Tyler, you know that. Departures is a magazine that's very international and sophisticated. And to be honest, I don't do that much American coverage because I found American magazines do that and they do it just fine. So I like to devote one issue just to things American. And there were quite a few things this year that I thought, you know, were really worth people's while.
Well, very handsome cover. Richard Storing, I have to let you go and get on with the day.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
That's all the time we have for Phil Hahn produced this show very ably. Our researcher was Alexa Firmanich, and our studio manager here in Milan, Jack Phillips. We've got Chris Fitch back in London. Also, thanks to the Park Hyatt here in Milan for hosting us on this very lovely terrace. Up next, after the news, it's Andrew Tuck with The Urbanist. Tom Edwards and Dominic Reynolds will be back with Midori House at the same time tomorrow. I'm off to Bangkok. I'm going to be co-hosting with the lovely Andrew Tuck. We'll be doing the briefing from the TCDC in the Sukhumvit area. That'll be a little bit later in the week. But for now, for all of us here in Milan, have a very, very good day. Thanks for listening and have a very good afternoon. Bye from Milan.
Rolex timepiece represents an ongoing commitment to innovation, horological expertise, and the passion of skilled watchmakers. All add up to make the one principle by which Rolex lives, that greatness is a journey that never ends. Rolex.